All right, so we left off, and we were up to handing over the keys. It's on Daf Ayin Amud Beis. I don't think we read the first part. Maybe we did. It's about 13, 14 lines down, where you see the little base for the Hagos Habach in the Gemara. So if you go up to the previous line, the last word. So the Gemara says the following. Hahi Misubisa. A Misubisa, Rashi explains, is a, how do we call it, a wine maitre d', a wine, the person in charge, the woman in charge of the wine. The claim is, the word will appear later in the next Gemara also. The claim is that the word Misubisa is related to the word Sove. And Sove, Zolo Besove, which is the description of the Ben Saramara, but you don't know what is Zolo Besove. But it says in Mishle, Alti, what's that? So you know that. So I don't think those two. I doubt that those two words are related. You know, no. I'll tell you why not. Because I think so. The other pasuk. How do you know what Zolel and Sove are?
Yeah.
But we just know the answer is Al Tihi B'Sove Yayin B'Zolalei Vasar Lamo. Pasuk in Mishle. So you see that Sove Yayin and Zolalei Vasar. So the root of Sove though is Samach Beis Aleph. The root of Misubin is Samach Beis Beis. It's from the Kfulim, the Geminates. So it's, you do sometimes have in Hebrew, contrary to what we have been taught, we're always taught, certain people always say, Hebrew always has three letter roots, no two letter roots. Rav Hirsch was very big in two letter roots, and Rav Shlomo Hirsch was actually correct. Hebrew always works with three letter stems, but there are two letter roots. And what that means is, for example, if you take the word, take the letters Peresh, and run through the Aleph Beis, and you can come up with something like 10 to 15 verbs by adding a third letter, all of which have something to do with taking one thing and breaking it into bigger parts, like Paratz, and Perech, and Parat with a Tess, and Paras, and Parash, and it goes on and on, Para and Param. All of these have something to do with something starting in the center, letting things go outward. Perach, a flower. So it means there was a root peresh, but when it's formed in verbs, it always has a third letter. So you have this is a radical one, I'm not sure this is true, there's a medrash, but it might not be a medrash, the verb to sell, machar, but there's also a word to sell, kaf resh yud, ochel tishburu me'itam ba'kesaf ha'achaltem, v'gamayim tichru me'itam ba'kesaf u'shisizem. Kaf resh yud. So mem kaf resh, kaf resh yud. In other words, that's very atypical. But you do have a number of roots like that, so it's not out of past. It's not inconceivable that the words are related. But anyway, so Misubisa, and your Misubisa in the Gemara certainly looks more like Samach Beis Beis than Samach Beis Aleph. But anyway, Rashi says it's related to Sove, Zolel v'Sove. So we have this Gentile, I don't want to say the maitre d', she's in charge of the wine. The Masra la Iklida. So this Misubisa, the Jewish wine steward, not at that, gave over the keys. The word eklida means keys, so that's why the Bach takes out the word maftecha. She gave it over to a non-Jewish woman. So the question is, you've now given her the keys. Are you concerned that she takes the keys, opens the door to the wine cellar, and goes rummaging through the barrels? So the Gemara says no. Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rav Yelazar, Uvda Hava Be Midrasha, the Maisa, I don't think the Maisa happened in the Beis Medrash. I think the Maisa was brought in the Beis Medrash. And V'amru Lo Masra La Ela Shmiras Mafteach Bilvad. Now, when I give someone the keys, that's not permission to, if I ask you to hold on to my house keys or my car keys, that's not permission to go driving them. Okay. So, Amar Abaye Afanan Namitnina. Abai says we have a riot to this. Hamoser maftechos la'am ha'aretz. If you give over the keys to your house to an am ha'aretz who's not neman on tumah v'tara, and he's assumed to be himself tameh, and he will touch things indiscriminately if he's not afraid of consequences. So, if you give the maftechos of your house or wherever your food would be was stored, la'am ha'aretz taharos of taharos, those foods that you were keeping as tahar, your taharos, they remain tahar. Lefi shalomasa lo ela shmiras mafteach bilvad. So now, what is the Braisa talking about? It's not talking about yayin. it's talking about taros. But the Gemara says, Hashta tarosav tahoros, yai nesach mi boy. That's the raya of the Gemara. It's a kal v'chomer that if they're not concerned that the Amoretz would have touched the taros, then we're certainly not concerned that the guy would have touched the yayin. Now, the question is that really a good kal v'chomer? So the Gemara immediately says the following. Lameimra, the taharos alime miyayin nesach. That implies that taharos are more, literally, alime means literally more powerful, but it means are more chamur in a certain way that we're more afraid that somebody is going to touch taharos than the guy is going to touch the ayin. So the Gemara says, in, yes, that's correct. The itmar. Chotzer shechalaka b'mesipas. You have a chotzer, and you divide it up with a mesipas. A mesipas is a very low barrier. It's kind of a minimum chalukah. This term appears in the first sugya in Maseches Bava Basra. The first sugya, verse Mishnah, and the first sugya in Maseches Bava Basra is about privacy. It's about privacy. I have a chatzer, and if we have a chatzer that's large enough, and one of the partners, or both of the partners agree, even if it's not, agree to divide up the chatzer, remember their houses open into a chatzer, the chatzer open into a mavoi, an alley. So if we agree to divide up the chatzer, then I can, let's assume, force you, the two lashonos of the Gemara, I can force you to build a wall in the chatzer to preserve my privacy. So if you happen to use a mesipas, which is really not a mechitza, both parties agree they didn't need a real wall, so a mesipas is like a minimalist wall. It means you could probably see over it, it means it's easy to reach over it, it's not very sturdy. So they divided this chatzer by mesipas. So I can reach over to the other side. So the Gemara says the following. Chatzer shalachalka mesipas. Amarav tarosav temeos. Uva ove kochafim eina osayayin nesach. Rav says that if you only divide the chatzer with a mesipas, but the other guy can reach over, and Rav is assuming he can reach over without looking suspicious. Like, what are you rummaging through my stuff? You see, when you don't have a division in the chatzer, it's easy to accidentally stray onto the other side. But when there is even something of a wall, minimal wall running down the middle, what excuse do you have for being on the other side? But Rav says, we are concerned if there are taros on one side that the other person reaches over. We're not concerned if there's yayin that the guy will reach over. So you see from Rav's statement that yes, taros or mochamer than yayin nesach. And Rabbi Yochanan Amar, af tarosav tahoros. Rabbi Yochanan believes that we're not even concerned about taros there. It may not be that Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with Rav. Rabbi Yochanan might agree that either yayin is that taros are more chamer than yayin. He could also disagree, but it wouldn't undermine our Gemara. He could be that they're equal. If they're equal, then the Gemara will also have proven its point about the maftachos. In other words, we want to say that the maftachos by yayin are not a problem. Mesiras hamaftach is not a problem. So too, and our raya was from taros, and if it's true by taros, it certainly is true by yayin. Now, it doesn't have to be that taros are more chomer than yayin; it just has to be that taros are equal to yayin. So even if you don't want to say like Rav, Rabbi Yochanan, also again, you can't prove it, but we presume Rabbi Yochanan would fit with this as well. Okay, so now the Gemara said. Now the Gemara is just going to get into a discussion. Rav and Yochanan, it's not really our topic. Meisave, ha'pnimis shel chaver, ha'chitzona shel am ha'aretz. You have two chatzeros here, an inner and outer chatzer. Now, what that means is the following. The door to the mavoi is here. Chatzer number one, chatzer number two, maybe it's just some thin wall dividing, it doesn't really matter. The assumption is that if the inner chatzer was of a chaver. A chaver is the opposite of Amoretz. He's someone who's makbid on Trumas and Maestros, on Tum of Atara. V'hachitzona shel Am Ha'aretz. The outer one is the Amoretz. Oso chaver shoteach sham peros u'miniach sham kelim. The chaver is allowed to leave in the inner chatzer fruits that could become tamei, kelim that could become tameim. Why? V'afa pishiyado shel Am Ha'aretz magas l'sham. Even though the Am Ha'aretz would be able to reach in, and it's not a wall, it's not a door he has to go through. He could just, reach over. Nonetheless, the Gemara says it's not a problem. Why? The answer is because the Amoretz could not get away with doing that. Because what possible reason would he have for moving inward towards the Chaver's Chatzer when the only place the Amoretz should be going is outside? In other words, If we had two apartments, we don't usually have this, and the only doorway to the hall was in one of the apartments, so you have apartment B, apartment A, and the hall, you expect apartment B people to be walking through apartment A at least to get to the hall. But you don't expect people from apartment A to ever be found in apartment B, because what's your reason for being there? What's your justified reason for being there? Okay, so that's what Rabbi Yochanan, so the Braisa says that the inner chotzer is the chaver, not a problem. So the question, the Gemara says, Kasha l'Rav. You see that when one party has no excuse being in the other party's chotzer, you're not concerned that they're going to touch something there. So the Amar l'Charav, the Gemara answers, Shani hasam shenispas alav keganav. No. He says there's a difference between an inner and outer chatzer versus two chatzeres that are side by side. Right? I have no reason ever to walk, I mean, it's not a great answer, but in one case, literally I should never be looking towards your chatzer. Yours, I have no shaychus there. But in the other case, a chatzer shechalaka v'mesipas, so I could literally be walking along the entire thing, almost always a hand away from your chatzer. So maybe in that case, we're more concerned because it's not as obvious. Okay, it seems to me it would be almost obvious, but change your question?
No.
Okay. So that's what Rav, that's how Rav is mitaritz.
It's my normal look.
What's that? Toshma, Rabban Shimon Gamaliel Omer, Gago Shel Chaver Lamala Mi Gago Shel Ha'amaretz. You have two houses, and each has a roof, but they're not the same height. And we'll presume that the roofs have a fence around them, have a maka. And unlike, well, I guess the city usually has flat roofs. In suburbia, we don't usually have flat roofs. But in the time of Chazal, they generally did have flat roofs. So you have two roofs next to one another. And the gag of the chaver is above the gag of the amaretz. It's higher up. Oso chaver shoteach sham peiros, umaniach sham kelim, uvavad shelote yado shalam aretz magas lasham. Rabban Shimon Gamliel says that you're only allowed to put your stuff in the upper gag if the Amaretz cannot reach it. It has to be higher up enough that he can't reach if he's trying to. Which means that if it is within reach, then it is a problem. So that would seem... No, the Chiddush is not if you can't reach it. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying, in order for it to be mutter, it has to be as such that he can't reach it. It's really a way of saying, if he can reach it, it's a problem. Which is a support for Rav's position. Against Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara says, Kash, the Rabbi Yochanan. So Amar lecha Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan would say to you, Shani hastam de iste lishtamute. Now, that's different. He has an excuse there. If he can reach it in that case, he has an excuse to have his pause there. Why? Because he can say, Amar imtsure kamimatsura. He's trying to figure out exactly, let's say he wants to do some building, and he's trying to figure out exactly where the wall is, you know, so he knows to do some type of construction thing. So he's feeling around, and while he's feeling around, he just goes a little farther and touches your stuff. Whereas in the case of a chatzer shechalaka b'mesipas, what's his excuse for being on the other side? Okay, that's what Rabbi Yochanan would be mitaritz. Tashma, one more b'risa. Gago shechaver b'tzad gago shalam aretz. Now, it's not one above and one below. Also, chaver shoteach sham peiros amaniach sham kelim ve'afal pi sheyado shalom aretz magas l'sham. Kasha l'rav. What is Rav going to do with that? Because that's more analogous to the chatzer shechalaka b'mesipas, right? It's two roofs on the same level. I presume there's some small dividing thing between them. You can reach over. Nonetheless, we say that the stuff is mutter, is tahor. So the Gemara says, Amar lecha Rav, lav ika Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel l'kai kavasei. Rav would say, yeah, I hold like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and I read, in other words, the case of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the case of this Braisa are not the same case. In Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's case, the roofs are not aligned. In this case, the roofs are aligned. The Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan is assuming that those two cases are very fundamentally different cases. There's no machlokes between the two Braises, between Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the anonymous Braisa. Why? Because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is talking about when the roofs are not, or where the roof of the Amaretz is lower, so he can make excuses to why his hands might be there. And this Braisa, the second Braisa, is dealing with a case where they're on the same level. And that's why he has no excuse, and that's why it's not a concern. Rav has to say no. That even though Rabban Shimon Gamliel gives a case where the roofs are not even, and the Tana of the last Braisa gives a case where the roofs are even, they would both argue and they would each adopt their position in both cases. In other words, Rabban Shimon Gamliel would say, whether or not the roofs were like this, or the roofs were like this, if the Am Haaretz can reach, problem. And the Tana Basra, whoever that town of that last Brisa, would say, no, doesn't make a difference whether the Ruz are like this or the Ruz are like this. The Tana Basra, Rabbi Yochanan could certainly say, and Rav might agree, would say that it's not a problem. So if a Rav is forced to say that it's a machlokas atanaim, and he's adopting Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position, that's how he survives, and Rabbi Yochanan can easily say, no, that I hold like everybody, and there's no problem at all. Okay. Any questions about this sugya? Okay. Next, the Mishnah says, Boleshes shenichnasa la'ir. What's a boleshes? So Rashi, wherever this word probably comes up in Shas, points to a targum. The targum is on the word vayichapes, when Yosef's steward, whoever he was, chased after the brothers, and he rummaged through their sacks. It says vayichapes, he searched, and the targum of vayichapes is uvalash. That's what the arm. So a boleshes in Mishnaic Hebrew means a party that's plundering, that likes to rummage through your stuff. And in this case, it probably is some type of a military party. It means when they come into town, they want to have a good time, and they don't feel constrained by anybody's laws, so they just go through stuff to their heart's content. Boleshes shenichnasa le'ir. Bishas shalom, if it's a time, if it's not currently in the middle of a war, chavios psuchos arasuros stumos armutaros. If there are open barrels of wine, you have to assume they were menasech then. Because that's what they were going, that they like to be menasech when they can. You know, they may not, if there are sealed barrels, we don't necessarily assume they're going to open every barrel up, but certainly any open barrels, they're not afraid of anybody. So they're just going to swish, swish. They'll do shich, shuch, and the barrels are no good. However, b'shas melchama, elu ve'elu mutaris. If it's a time of war, all the barrels are mutar, unless you know otherwise. Lefisha ain't panay lenasech, because they have better things to be worried about. Even these very religious goyim who want to take every opportunity to be mishachshech and be menasech the ayin, you know, it's nice, my religion is important, but when I have people coming after me with their weapons, I have more important things, more pressing things to be doing right now. Okay. So now the Gemara asks a very interesting question on this. V'raminhi. We have a contradiction from a b'raisa. Ir shekvashuha karkon. If you have a city which a karkom is matzor, by the way, but here again, Rashi also points to the Targum. Rashi knew Targum Muklis pretty well. I do like to say that it was a little easier for Rashi because he didn't have to learn any of the Mefarshim on Chumash. He only had Unklis to learn. He said, we have so many other Mefarshim to learn, so if we don't get to Unklis, okay, we understand that a little better. So anyway, so Rashi says a karkom is a matzor. It's a siege. It's a siege. Ir shekvashua karkom, kol kohano shebesocha or psulos. Any kohanos, and what the Gemara assumes here, what the Brisa assumes, is that it assumes that any Jewish woman who were conquered, any women who were conquered in the city, would have been defiled by their Gentile armies. That's the assumption. Probably not an unreasonable assumption in classical warfare. There were no Geneva Conventions back then, so even if they were, they'd probably still have been flouted, but there were no such conventions, so people did what they wanted. You understand why the Torah regulated Eishes Tzifas Toar and what the norm was. The norm wasn't very, very good by today's standards. But the assumption that the Mishnayos and Ksubos make is that when you have a city in which all the women were potentially defiled, if they don't have witnesses to testify that they weren't, so then, if they are the wives of a Kohen, the assumption is that they were nivalos, that they were raped, and therefore, whatever the halachic ramifications that come with that are to be assumed. In the case of the wives of Kohanim, so an Eishes Yisrael, this week's Parsha, an Eishes Yisrael who commits adultery willingly is not allowed to remain with her husband. But an Eishes Yisrael who's raped, while she has what we call in halacha shem zona, she's muteris labayla because she was, to invert the Torah's words, nispasa, right? She was not lo nispasa, she was nispasa. Now that's only true legabe and Eishes Yisrael. But it means two things. Number one, if this woman, let's say her husband were to die, she cannot marry a kohen. Because any woman who was nivelas to a goy is not allowed to marry a kohen, because she has the halachic shame of what Torah refers to as a zona, isha zona v'chalalo yikachu. And if it was the wife of a Kohen, then she too would be Asura Labayli. He would have to divorce her. That obviously leads to potentially terrible consequences. In modern context, my sense is that the poskim work very hard to avoid these kinds of circumstances. This doesn't really happen anymore. And I'm not sure we would say that, I'm not sure we would say the same din anymore. Lagabe, a city that were besieged, although I don't know. Looking at some of the things that happened with ISIS, maybe it would be. Maybe I'm crazy for saying that the din of the Mishnah isn't true anymore. But if it were two Western European countries fighting today, and one besieged the city, I don't know if the din of the Mishnah in Ksubas would apply, if we would say it exactly applies the same way. Anyway, you know where this issue does come up. But I know there are truvas about this, but I don't remember any of the details in the Holocaust. What was the assumption in the Shoah about the women who were in the concentration camps? Now, I suspect, by the way, in Metzias, probably the din of the Mishnah wasn't applicable. The Nazis probably yes, there were examples of Nazis who raped Jewish women, but I think they also believed that Jews and Jewish women were animals and not worthy of their attention in this regard. So I'm not sure, in that case, the din of the Mishnah would have applied. I don't know. But there are tshuvos. I know there are tshuvos that relate to this, that deal with this issue. Now it's all coming back to me. Yeah, better not to be spoken about. Yes.
She doesn't have any nemonis?
She does not have nemonis on herself. It's a davar shebe'erva. So there are, the Gemara does have one major kula.
Nida she does, right?
Yeah. Correct, that's Isser. Eid Echad is Nemem Bissurim, but this is a Davar Shebe'erva. This is a personal status issue.
Okay.
Yeah, this is different. There are certain kulas that the Gemara does have, say that if there's one hiding place in the city where one person could have been hidden away, then any of the women who say that we weren't defiled would be believed because they could have said we were in hiding in that place. I think they have such a thing in the Gemara. So there are certain things around it, but nonetheless, this is the din. So the assumption, of course, is that this is Bishas Milchama, right? The enemies have besieged the city, they break through, they're raiding, but this is Shas Milchama, and the assumption is that they had time to be boil. So if that's the case, why does the Mishnah say Boleshes Shenichnas Aleir B'Shas Melchama Eilav Eilam Mutarim? So the Gemara answers Amar Rav Mari Lenasech Ein Penai Livol Yesh Penai, which is an odd kind of statement because I presume that Lenasech takes less time than being Boel. On the other hand, Rashi writes Lenasech Ein Penai the Yetzer Hanisuch Lotakif Lahu Utrudim B'Melchama. It's not a function of Penai in the literal sense of having time. It's a question of, you know, yes, Goyim like to worship their Avodah Zarah, their Avodah Zarah and get on their good side. That's very nice. But that's not the same thing as, you know, one of the most powerful human drives. And therefore, the assumption is that B'Shas Milchama would be an issue. Okay. So that's what the Gemara says about this. All right. Now, next Mishnah. Ha'umnin shel Yisrael sheshalach lahem Oved kochav mchavesh yai nesech bischaron. You have Jewish craftsmen, it could be Jewish workers, any kind of work that they did, and they're owed money by the guy. And and what does the guy do? He sends them a barrel of wine.
Nice.
It's payment. The modern equivalent, but I don't think it's usually as payment. People have asked me this question: if you have a non-Jewish coat, what's that?
A case of wine, or
I never know. You know that I haven't thought about. See, the interesting thing there is that if it's non-kosher, we might say today the Rama would probably have said, "Ah, but hanot mutar bano, stam yenam." No, people send a gift of chametz on Pesach to a Jewish coworker, and what do you do in that case? Because if you accept the gift, immediately the gift becomes Asur Bahana and Vale Bayra Bayimatzes. What's that?
Yeah, you're
so you're over and it's Asur Bahana. It doesn't even accomplish anything.
I got a gift of scotch this year, one Pesach. Someone sent me like $150 bottle of scotch on Pesach.
So right. So the solution is to refuse to accept. You don't have to refuse to be kona the scotch, at least till after Pesach. Right. That's what you have to do in order to be an issue. Now the problem. Now the problem here, of course, is that you don't want to be kona at all. And once you're koneh, you can't give it back to the guy and him give you money, because now you're selling yayin esach. Now you're getting hano. So the Mishnah says, mutar lomar tein lanu es dameha. You can refuse to accept and say, I'm not interested in this, could you just please give me cash? Misha nichnas al rishusan aser. Once it's nichnas to the Jews' rishus, which means he's koneh it. It means an act of kinyan. It doesn't mean literally, if the Amazon person, you know, has, I mean, it's an interesting question, but I don't know if they have it yet. They're talking about it. You know, they have keys or something, and they put it in your thing.
Or a drone.
What's that?
Or a drone that drops it in your...
In your backyard. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Fine. So chatzer is not kone against your will. Right? And that's when you have a chatzer, so we say that chatzer shel adam is kone lo. It's either... It's probably yad. It's an extension of his hand. The Gemara entertains the possibility that maybe your chatzer is like a shaliach that's kone for you, but it's not kone against your will. So when we say nichnas lo shusat, means you were kone it. Typically, when something, in most cases, when something enters your rishus, you intend to be kone. So not necessarily here, but that's what the Mishnah says. Okay, so the trick is to avoid being kone this gift, this payment, this object, so that you can turn around and throw it back to the guy and say, "Listen, I'm not interested in this. Please just give me something else." Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Mutar la'adam lomar la'ovid kochavim, say v'hafes alai manas hamelech. So the way Rashi understands, and I'm going to go just with Rashi's interpretation here. If a Jew has to pay taxes, and he asks his friend, the guy, do me a favor, would you get the tax collector off my back? I'll pay back later. And he might know that the guy is going to go, how is he going to get the tax collectors back? He's going to give him wine. Which means that the guy is giving yayin esech to the tax collector. I don't think the IRS, I haven't seen, I think they take checks, maybe money orders, maybe credit card if you pay the fee. I haven't seen any barrels of wine. Yes. What's that?
You never know.
If you're trying to bribe an IRS agent, there might be a barrel of wine might be useful, but I think as payment, so probably not like that. Besides, at least I know where my taxes go. You probably should send bourbon rather than wine. It's Kentucky. That's in my P.O. box. So it's mutter to do so. And then we don't say that when he's paying wine, he's your shaliach to use pein yai nesach. And Rashi explains, Rashi says, the first Rashi in the Gemara, Seif ha-feis alai manas ha-melech arnona, which is like a head tax, or some type of a tax. Isur. So it's like, sounds like an income tax. V'Yisrael zeh shechayiv lasei slamelach yayin, mutar loma la'ovid kochavim hafeis alai, afal gav de kayayiv hayovid kochavim yayin esach. V'hay Yisrael hu par e dame, and the Jew pays him back money. Why? Kevin the Havamatzi Lasaluke Lishlicha the Malka Bazuse, Kiyarle over the Kochavim Yayin Esach, La Shluche de Yisrael hu. In other words, yes, you're supposed to pay. What's that? Well, that's just, it's not just that he didn't tell them how to pay, it's that everybody takes cash, right? There may be various forms of ways you can pay, but maybe soon not anymore.
King.
What?
Cash is king.
Right, cash is king. So this tax collector is really supposed to collect a tenth of the grain, a tenth of the wine. And so cash, always happy to take cash. Not a check, you either give me wheat, wine, or you give him cash. So since the guy who paid off the taxes for me had an option to pay in cash, the fact that he chose to pay in wine is his choice. He's not being my shaliach in paying with the Yayin Esach. So now the Gemara asks a question on this. Meisave, al yomar adam laoved kochavim ul tachtai leotzer. So a Jew is not allowed to say to a guy, ul is the Aramaic word, which means hikanes, enter. Tachtai, in my stead, leotzer. So Rashi has two interpretations what leotzer is. Let's assume for the moment the first one, otzer, is to press. So the otzer here is the ruler, the tax collector, something like that. He quotes ze yatzor ba'ami.
Treasurer?
No, because that's with an aleph. That's the second interpretation, is otzar as a treasury. But he quotes ze yatzor be'ami as a ruler. I assume it means someone who presses, who puts pressure. So you're not allowed to say that to a guy. So how is that different, save our face alai manas hamelech, if the guy goes and pays in wine? So the Gemara answers, Amar le Rav. Rav responds, ul tachtai la'otzer kamas? No. Holodamia elalaha, aval omar lo malteini min ha'otzer. Is a difference between, I say to the guy, do me a favor, act on my behalf. act on my behalf with the tax collector. Then, whatever the guy pays, he is my shaliach. Malteini min ha'otzer says, get this guy off my back. I don't care how you do it. I don't know what... So Rashi claims, and this is a little bit difficult, Rashi says that ul tachtai, you have to pay in wine. So when the guy gives wine, instead of you're giving wine, he's giving it wine at your behest. Whereas Malteini min ha'otzer is... when it is a situation where the guy can get the guy off your back that any way he wants. Which really, what it really means then, according to Rashi, is that Rav's claim is the following. If I can pay my taxes in cash, or you can pay my taxes for me in cash, then it doesn't matter how you pay for me. If the tax has to be paid in wine, and either I pay it or you pay it, and I ask the guy to pay it on my behalf, so that's a problem. Tosus doesn't like that. He comes up with something that he thinks that's too obvious, comes up with a different interpretation. That is how Rashi explains the Gemara here. So really, then what emerges in the sugya, there are sort of two different issues. This is not the exact same din of the Mishnah. The din of the Mishnah is a concern of a guy, of a Yisrael, taking ownership of the Yayin, and now when he gets rid of it to the guy, it's as if he is selling Yayin Nesach and being Nene. The case in the Gemara is really not like that at all. The case in the Gemara is being Nene in a very different way, that the guy acts as my shaliach to pay the government in wine. It's as if I had paid the government in wine. I mean, there's a superficial similarity, but it's something very, very, it's a bit different. Because I think it's clear, in any of these cases, the Jew never takes possession of the wine, in the cases in the Gemara. In the Mishnah, the concern is if it's nichnas bershusa.
Okay. In all these cases, we don't have a concern that if a third party heard about this, they would interpret the Jew being transacting in Yayin Nesach?
That doesn't appear to be what the Gemara's concern is. Marasayin. It doesn't sound like that. All right. All right. If there aren't enough to go around, we have a few more. Okay. The next Mishnah and the next sugya starts with the Ayin Nesach, but it's going to take us far afield into Maseches Bava Metzia. And it has to do with the rules of Kinyan. So before we get into the sugya, I want to introduce the background, that's what we'll do today, of basic kinyanim, and you'll see then how it impacts upon our sugya. I want to just read the Mishnah itself. Hamocher yeno lo'ovdei kochavim. A Jew is selling his wine to a non-Jew. Okay. And what he's doing is, he's going to pour the wine into a kli. Not clear whose kli, but he's going to pour it from his barrels into some kli for measuring. And the guy is then going to take the kli and do something with the wine in it. If it's his kli, he's just going to walk away with the wine. If it's the Jew's measuring cup, he's presumably going to pour it into his own kli. Pasak ad shalom adad. Now, when the guy is buying the wine, it's possible that you'll measure the wine out for him, and then you'll come to a price. Or you might come to a price first before you measure the wine. The assumption of the Mishnah is that if you haven't come to a price yet, no matter what you do, the party buying it can back out. Because he can say, one second, I never agreed to pay $50 a bottle for this wine. You know, $20 is my max. So the Mishnah says that if you were posek, if you set a price on the wine before you modeid, now you modeid the wine, and now the guy pays you cash, damav mutarim, it's not a problem. However, madar ad shelo posak, if you measure the wine out first, before you set a value, then damav asurim. We're not going to get to the Gemara's explanation of this today, but presumably what is going on here is the Mishnah is determining what the time of Kinyan is. In the first case, by the time you do the Medida, measuring it out before the guy somehow is Kona, before it becomes Yai Nesach, the guy is already Kona. he's kona the wine of the Jew before it's Yayin Esav, and when he's kona at that time, he bought kosher wine from a Jew, he owes the Jew money. If before the goy actually is kona, technically, the wine becomes Yayin Esav, it's now the Jew's wine that became Jewish Yayin Esav, and now when you sell it to the goy, that's being getting hanar from Yayin Esav. And that's why the Gemara here is going to go into a tangent for a while, which will eventually come back to the Mishnah, to talk about how do kinyanim work. Now, there is a Mishnah above Metzia, which says the following. Kinyanim are generally unimportant today, with the exception of one case that I can think of that typically comes up. Rabbi Lukstein is selling the chametz, and he has to make sure that the goy is kona. Now, ordinarily, when two of us make a kinyan, if we both agree, for the most part, it's going to work, and we're going to walk away, and by the time we finish the transaction, we'll have made multiple kinyanim anyway. In other words, if you sell me your object, and I take the object, I take it to my house, I already probably have, even if I didn't pay you, if I did pay you, I probably have several forms of kinyanim I made already. Kinyan Meshicha, kinyan Chatzar in my house, all sorts of ways that kinyanim might transpire. But we're very concerned when you sell a chametz to a guy. I don't know, I've never done mechiras chametz. How many kinyanim do you remember you do? Five kinyanim. You probably do kesef. You probably do agav.
Agav karka. Yes.
You do chalipin.
Chalipin, yes.
I'm running out of choices. You can't really do meshicha on the chametz, right?
Shtar.
Shtar. Oh.
Shtar.
Oh, well, that, no, but isn't the shtar for the kinyan agav, for the karka? You can't do shtar on metaltolin. Okay, I don't...
Never thought of that.
Okay, I'm sure there are five, and I just whatever.
And then Kias Kap.
Okay, so that's more like Minagasochrim, right? Contemporary practice. Okay,
But I know that the Kinyanim are absolutely ironclad because when Jimmy Olav Hashalom bought the chametz from my father Olav Hashalom in my father's house, my mother always had on the little bar that we have, she covered it over because it was already kosher for Pesach. She covered it over with some kind of a cloth, and she had a bottle of schnapps there, and Jimmy would stand up and he would say, "Now I'm going to have me a drink from my schnapps."
There you go. So.
The star worked.
So in ordinary circumstances, it often doesn't even matter. To give sort of another example of this, okay, it's wedding season. I wouldn't suggest to any grooms-to-be that you ever make this mistake or play this game. But supposing that the chassan left the ring in the possession of the best man who forgot the ring at home. I'm sure this has happened to you more than one occasion.
It happened, but
because
about 2 weeks ago.
You're too methodical. You probably run through the checklist. But
I have a wedding this afternoon let's see if discuss this.
So the question is, what do you do? You know, how do you give the kala the ring if the ring isn't there? Because kinyan kesef doesn't, in other words, the kesef doesn't work to transfer. Firstly, she can't buy the ring anyway, and kinyan kesef is going to see it actually doesn't work, and we'll have to explain why. So the problem, of course, is that normally, I guess you can't use chalipin, because an isha is not nicknames by chalipin, although I don't know if chalipin on the ring, I'm not sure. But there is a way of transferring the ring from the chassan to the kala. It's called a maimed shlashtan. Maimed shlashtan means the following. It means JJ and Larry and I are standing here. JJ has something in mind that I want to give to Larry. Metaltlin, an immovable object, normally you have to make a kinyan, let's say hagbah or meshicha. If the three of us are present and I say, give it to Larry, the maimed shlashtan, in the presence of the three of us, the possession of the object now transfers to Larry. It is one of three things the Gemara in Gittin says is Hilchasa Balitaima. It makes no sense. It's some takana the Rabbanon, because by rules d'oraisa it works not at all. Okay, so now normally it doesn't...
that again?
Yeah. Tenehu Laploni. B'maimad Shlashtan. If I say, give it to Larry, in the presence of Shlashtan, the person, the Nifkad, the person who has the Pikadon, the person who owns it, and the person who, to whom it's being given, Tenehu Leploni, B'maimad Shlashtan, it's Kona. It's Kona.
Only B'dibor.
Only B'dibor, correct. Only B'dibor.
You have an owner, somebody who's transferring it, and the person who's getting it. Those are the three parties.
Correct. The person transferring it is the person who has, it's in his rishus, he's the shomer. But it's not here. It's in his apartment.
So custody doesn't change, but title.
Correct.
But doesn't he have to agree? Yeah, right.
Yeah. I have to, Larry has to be willing,
together, right?
Larry has to be willing to accept it, because and I have to be willing to give it. I don't know if JJ is what his role. Now, he could say or refuse, I suppose. I guess that's possible. But if we're in agreement, the way we can transfer title is exactly that way. Normally, metaltum is only transfer title when you actually do something and handing the object over. We're going to explore that. But I want to explain why. So you could theoretically do a maimed shlashtan under the chuppah. Where, let's say, the best man has in his reshus, but is not here. And the groom says to the best man, Sinehu Liplonis to the Kala, the Maimut Shlashtan, she's Kona and she's Mekudeshes. However, that Kinyan's only Midrabanan. So the question is she Mekudeshes Midaraisa Midrabanan? So there's a very long Avni Milun in Simen Chavches. Avni Milun was written by the Ketzos, I believe. It's one of his three major Sfarim. So the Avni Milun goes through a whole Arichos. He claims it's a Machlokas Harishonim. We have a principle, Hefker based in Hefker. Right, Beis Din can take away property from someone. That's how, even if something belongs to you midaraisa, Beis Din can take it away from you and let me take it. But the question is, does that power, hefker based in hefker, work midaraisa only to be mafkir, to take it away from you, or even to be makne? It's one thing to say, you know, Lenny owns this thing, Beis Din, the takana the rabbanon takes it away from him. But if I haven't actually made a kinyan, can the takana the rabbanon make it in my reshus midaraisa, even though I didn't make a kinyan on it? So in most cases, it doesn't matter, because after we make a maimed shlashtan, at some point Larry's going to get the object physically, and when he gets the object physically, he makes what would be the real kinyan. It's in his possession. But right now, under the chuppah situation... Well, it wouldn't matter by the kala either, whether she's mikudeshes midaraisa d'rabbanan, unless some wise guy in the meantime goes up there at the meal and says, gives her a ring and says, haret mikudeshesli. Right? So she's not marrying midaraisa to the first guy. Now you need to get from the side. You got tsuris, right? Okay. You know, I don't. I think that the you mean the Edim. You know, I think we work with an assumption. We always ask the Edim. We say for shtick is the Shava Pruta, but I think you know, we don't. I thought, in other words, listen, any ring, it is shtick, because any ring is the Shava Pruta. Right? Asking the Chassan whether the ring belongs to him is meaningful. But ask him, when you see a ring of probably any metal, I have one chassan who used a titanium ring, okay? Presumably any metal of that amount, virtually any metal, is going to be worth at least a pruta. So anyway, so...
Would that work if you forgot the ring? If the ring was in your house?
No.
Oh, right, so
no. By most kinyanim, even if it, let's say, works only midrabanan, eventually you're going to take real possession of it. Okay. But there are some cases where it really does matter, right? By the guy and chametz, it really matters, because the guy is not going to go make another kinyan on all, he's not going to take physical possession of all the chametz. So if the kinyan doesn't really, if the kinyan, let's say, only worked midrabanan, maybe if that were true, and you assume that midrabanan, if you assume that Hefker based in Hefker only works with Midaraisa to take away something, but not to make it somebody else's without a kinyan, that's only the Rabbanon, then you'd have a problem of Chametz Shavar Lava Pesach. Right? That would be an issue. Okay, so but to bring it down to earth a little bit.
So I have a wedding this afternoon.
Yes.
Where the Kala, in my discussion with the Chassan and Kala, where I explained the ring has to belong. Yeah, who bought the ring? And she said, I bought the ring. So the ring is hers. And so my plan is to have her sell that ring to him for $10. What you're saying really is that's not enough.
Well, I would have said otherwise. I mean, she doesn't have to sell the ring to him. She can give the ring to him. Right? Come pick it up. He's going to pick it up anyway.
Yeah, he is going to pick it up.
He's going to pick it up because in order to the position. So he has reshus to be koned from her. That's all he needs. You know, the only concern you could raise is, you know, is this like a matana manas lahase? Because if he doesn't give it to her and so on and so forth, so you can give him $10. But really, al pi din, when he picks up the ring with her permission and she says it can become your ring, whether through matana or meher, that kinyan works.
The presence of shnei
edim. I don't think you need edim for the kinyan on the ring. When a chassan tells you it's his ring,
yeah,
do you require edim for that?
No.
You trust him, right? You know, the aid, this is required on the Ma'asei Kedushin. There are lots of things, you know, by analogy, if a person eats chelev, they get malchus, but only if two witnesses see them eat the chelev. What if we only know it's chelev because before this, one aid said, that's chelev. So the halacha is, yeah, he gets malchus. Ah, but we only knew that he ate chelev on the basis of the testimony of one witness because we didn't know it was chelev. Doesn't matter. Once we establish, based upon Eidecha Nema Bisurin, that this is chelev, now once we've established that, if he eats in front of two edim, he's chayev. If a person walks in holding an object and they claim it's their object, they have nemonos until somebody proves otherwise. So.
I mean, in Mitzias, I would disagree a little bit with you that her giving him the ring, here, you can have my ring.
So you're not convinced it's a real matana? And, right, okay.
Yeah.
But then you could argue that he should have to pay her full value for the ring. They'll be married. I'm not worried. Okay.
And does it embarrass the groom to have two aidim to see that she's really the owner of the ring?
It's not going to embarrass
it. Okay. So here now, so we're gonna pull this back. We're gonna pull this back from the esoteric realms into the more practical. The Mishnah in Bava Metzia in the beginning of Maimich Shlashtan is very not practical. So the reason you don't deal with too many Maimich Shlashtan shilas because probably, you know, only about, you know, 0.1% of the Orthodox population has even heard of a Maimich Shlashtan. So people don't generally do kinyan in that way.
But why would you use it? It's such an incredible vehicle. It's so easy.
You know why it's a more incredible vehicle, actually? When the Gemara in Gittin quotes this, I think Rava says that this only makes sense when you're talking about a tangible object. But if you're talking about transferring debt, it doesn't work. But I swear, Baha'i Elokim, Rav said it even by debt. What does that mean? Firstly, transferring debt in the first place is halachically complicated. If I have a shtar, you owe me $100 in a shtar, okay, what's called a milva b'shtar, and I want to transfer that to Lenny. So the Gemara has a machlokas how the kinyan works, how I can transfer the debt. Does it have to be just by giving him my shtar, or do we have to write another shtar on my shtar? Whether osios are nicknames b'mesira, osios means a shtar, letters, are nicknames b'mesira, or only nicknames b'ksiva, by writing another shtar. We paskin only b'ksiva, and even there, it's a machlokas Rabbeinu Tam and the Rif, whether that works midaraisa. I think Rabbeinu Tam holds, there is no such thing as transferring a debt midaraisa. Doesn't work. You can't transfer it. Now, that only works, though, when you have a shtar. What if you have a milval peh? We have witnesses. Okay? I mean, you don't need witnesses except for proof. But you borrowed $100 from me. You owe me $100. There's no shtar. Can I transfer that to Lenny? So the truth is, you can't transfer it through a shtar because it's not, there's no osios. There's nothing to hand over. The claim Rava makes is that Rav says Maimich Shlashtan works even by a milval peh, which is pretty incredible. I don't know if there's even another way to transfer a milval peh. You know, an oral loan, meaning a non-document loan. So it's a very, yes, that's where it's a very powerful tool. Under the chuppah, you got more things to worry about of people getting annoyed that somebody left the ring behind, and it's kind of unromantic to be mocking a ring through a Maimich Shlashtan. But, you know, as a pure Litvak, you know, a cross between a Litvak and a Vulcan, so we can say that, you know, it works. What's wrong? What's the difference between that and giving her, you know, the ring under the chuppah? But we could do more interesting.
You could take a ring from somebody else and sell it to the...
Yes, you could. I once was witness to a kiddushin. I wasn't the misader, where the ring, the groom's ring, got mixed up with the bride's ring that she was going to give him later. Not under the chuppah, they just got mixed up, and the misader asked the groom, "Is this your ring?" So he said, "No," and then he said, "Just kidding," but it turned out it wasn't his ring, but he was afraid to say it wasn't his ring. So they did the Kiddushin. I won't tell the whole story, but they did the Kiddushin. And then, after they did the Kiddushin, They were started reading the Ksuba. They hadn't made the Shefa Brachos. And the Masada Kedushin, who was a student of mine, comes down from the Chuppah. I had been an eight, so I saw this like firsthand, and said, Rebbe, it wasn't the Hasam's ring. It was the Kala's ring. So I said, just don't let them start Shefa Brachos, because it's Bracha Latala. They're not married yet. And whatever. We ended up going up, and without too much of a fuss, although people probably wondered what was going on, there are more complicated parts of the story. And she gave him. She gave him the ring. Okay, there was another rabbi under the chuppah, complicated issue what involved with that. There's nothing wrong with the rabbi, but there was a reason why it was complicated. He said, he took the ring from the kala, he said, do you give this to him? She said, yes, and they did a do-over on the kiddushin, and then they went and made the Sheva Brachas. So yeah, you can, you know, I haven't done so many Sidur kiddushin, but I've been witness to a few interesting ones. Okay. So the Mishnah says the following. Hazahav kona es hakesef, v'hakesef eina kona es hazahav. What does this mean? So the Mishnah here is working with the following principle. Whenever you have a transaction that involves currency being transferred for something else, something in this transaction is treated as currency and something is treated as goods. Now, if you have two goods being exchanged, this is not an issue. If I'm giving you my apples and you're giving me your pears, it's not a problem. If you're giving me your apples and I'm giving you cash, it's also clear what is the cash, what is the currency. But what happens if I give you gold coins and you give me silver coins? Which is the cash, or the currency, and which are considered the goods? So the Mishnah says, Hazav kones hakesef. If I want to buy silver from Adrian and I give her the gold and she's going to give me the silver, when I give her the gold, she's kona the gold, and I am kona the silver, even if I haven't taken possession of it yet. In other words, the gold is considered like the apples. It's the commodity. It's the materials. When she gets the gold, wherever the kesef is now niknes to me. Or it's owed, maybe not that, because she owes me money. Transaction's done. Ha-gizahav konas ha-kesef, ha-kesef ena kosasav. If she wants to buy my gold coins, and she gives me silver coins, the transaction isn't final yet. I can change my mind, or she can change her mind and give her the money back, or the silver money back, or she can demand her silver money back.
So she's using that as a proxy for the more expensive and the less expensive.
So I don't want to use expensive, less expensive. The truth is, the original nusach of the Mishnah, and it's found, look, if you take a Yushalmi off the shelf, and the early manuscripts of the Mishnah, the girs of the Mishnah is hakesef kones azav, vazav eno kones hakepes. It's the reverse. The Bavli points out that Rebbe, when he was younger, taught the Mishnah that way, and when he was older, he changed his mind. That version seems to assume that the more precious the currency is, that's considered more currency, and zav is more valuable than kesef, therefore that's treated as the currency. Yeah, well, the value, yeah, could. But what changed in Rebbe's mind was that we don't look at the value, we look at what is the most easily used currency. And kesef was the most widely accepted currency, and therefore, kesef, with respect to anything else, is treated as...
You know what I'm saying? Like, Canadian dollar, U.S. dollar exchange rate hovers around one, right? So let's say you're at a point in time where it's one for one.
Which is the currency and which is the goods? I don't know. That's a good question.
Wouldn't they both be currencies?
What's that?
The Mishnah is
two currencies. Value. The Mishnah is two currencies.
But they have intrinsic values. That doesn't make a difference. There's no intrinsic value to a Canadian dollar or an American dollar.
I don't know the answer to that question. In other words, you're asking the question when currency is backed by nothing but the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, whatever that means, or whatever that's worth. So how do you take the account? I don't know. I don't know what it would be. But let's assume at least it's coins, which they are not, it's not their worth, but at least they do have some value. Although pennies, well, I don't know, a penny of zinc I think is worth, our zinc pennies are worth less than a penny, the metal. But okay, that's why they stopped making them out of copper, because the copper was worth more than a penny. Okay, so the Mishnah says, as we have it, Hazav konas hakesef, hakesef ina konas hazav, hanachoshes konas hakesef, hakesef ina konas hachoshes. Maos ha-raos konos ha-sayafos. Money, maos, which are silver, smaller silver coins, not dinarim, but some smaller silver coin, if they're raos, meaning they're not in good condition, so they're not as, remember, today, again, it's all the full faith and credit of the government, so it doesn't really matter if your quarter is a little beaten up, right? But then it was actually the intrinsic value, and if it's a little broken at the edges. So up until a certain point, people will accept it. At a certain point, people will say, give me a different one, right? Because you're really cheating me. So Maos HaRaos are Konos HaSayafos, which makes sense, because Maos Raos are not as good currency as Maos Yafos. Vayafos Enon Konos HaRaos, and Asimon Konos HaMatbea, and Asimon is not a token, but Asimon is a token. It's an unminted coin. In other words, it's a blank. In the Mishnah, an Asimon is a Kesef She'en Alav Tzura. It doesn't have, it's not minted. No impression. Asimon Konos HaMatbea, because it is the metaltel, it's chattel, it is the goods. Vamatbea Enon Konos Asimon. Now the Mishnah gives you what really is the rule. Metaltalin kona samatbea, matbea ena kona es hametaltalin. Kola metaltalin, konan zoeze. In other words, if you have something that is currency with metaltalin, metaltalin's kona the currency, and not vice versa. If you have two things that are metaltalin, either one is kona the other. It's really, that's almost like a king and chalipin. The only difference between that and a king and chalipin is a king and chalipin can be done even without shavius. In other words, the rabbi will give the chassan on behalf of the kala today. He'll give her him a kli. In exchange for that kli, what do you use? A pen? A handkerchief?
Cell phone.
Oh, well, that's getting close. I say a pen is worth, I don't know, 20 cents, 30 cents, 10 cents. In exchange for that pen, the chassan is being mishabed, all of his nechassim, all of his assets, to pay the ksuba. That's presumably worth more than the pen. But nonetheless, I'm not sure in the smartphone. Now you have to get into valuations and so on, how much the ksuba is worth, futures and so on, okay. But the pen, I'm pretty sure, is worth less. But it doesn't matter. Chalipin doesn't have to be in exchange. In fact, we even allow, I assume you're going to, I would never use a smartphone. If the chassan were a wise guy inside a thing, I'll keep it. Is it an iPhone? No. Oh, I don't know. It depends which version, but we say that the okay, so I'll give it back. But the bottom line is that it is a real kinyan, but it's symbolic. It's like we've got a Megillas Rus. The chassan typically always gives the kli back, and the person will give the kli back. But what is going on is in exchange when the chassan is given that kli on behalf of the kala, he is giving something in exchange. It doesn't those values don't have to line up. Not in this case, but in a regular transaction, the purpose, Lenny, is transferring title. Even if you're not paying now, the money will be owed. Right? Now, if I'm buying your cow, but the cow is somewhere in the pastures, or I don't want to schlep the cow, you don't do hagba on a cow, you don't pick it up, you do meshicha, or maybe mesira on a cow, but let's say we wanted to make sure that the transaction is final, so I'll give you an apple for my cow, or a handkerchief. Right? It's not, I should say an apple, it's not clear you use an apple, a handkerchief, a kli. I give you a kli in exchange for the cow, but the kli doesn't value the cow, I still have to pay you. I now owe you money. I now owe you the value of the cow. But the kinyan, the transfer of title, takes place through the kinyan itself. So the Mishnah says, but here, metalfim konazozo could be chalipin, or it could be literally, I give you $100 worth of apples, you take it, and now you had $100 worth of wheat you designated, that's now mine. Now the Mishnah says, ketzad, mashach heimenu peiros, v'lanas al mos. If I make a mashiach, I pull the apples, but I don't give money, eno yachal lachzar bo. Nobody can back out. Nasal no maos, v'lo mashach heimenu peiros, yachal lachzar bo. If I paid the cash, but I haven't made a mashiach on the apples, I can back out, make you give me back the cash, or you can back out and just give me back the cash. But aval amru, misha parame anshe dor hamabul, midor hapalaga, hu asali parame misha eno omed bidibura. And the way this is understood by the Gemara is that the party that backs out in this case without mutual agreement has to accept upon himself a curse. It's not just a homiletical statement of the Mishnah that the one who exacted punishment from the generation of the flood and the generation of dispersal will extract punishment from the person who doesn't keep his word, but the person actually has to accept upon himself this klala in Beis Din if they want to back out. Well, I don't know if in Beis Din, but they have to accept this klala upon themselves. So the Gemara here is going to present a very basic machlokas. And the machlokas is as follows. If you take a look in the second source, Amar Rabbi Yochanan on the first line, Dvar Torah ma'os konos. Mina Torah, kinyan kesef works. Now here he doesn't say anything about Mashiach. He just says that giving cash works. And once you give the cash, transaction is final midaraisa. Why did the Chachamim say that Mashiach is necessary to be Kona? Here's what's going to happen. I have this little cheap shack out in my backyard with all the wheat in it, and then a fire breaks out. Now you gave me the cash for the wheat already. So what do I do? Oh, the shed's burning down. I don't like the shed anyway. Ah, but what about the wheat? What are your wheat? Not my problem. That's your problem. It's your wheat that's being burned. So because of the concern of that the seller would not take proper care of the object in the interim before the buyer actually retrieves it, because he'll say, it's not mine, and I've received the kesef, as long as he doesn't do active damage or wasn't poshea, then he has no incentive to protect the object. He never accepted upon himself real shmira, and so on. So Rabbi Yochanan says, because of that, there's a gzera, shema yomar lo chitecha nisrafu balia. That's what Rabbi Yochanan says. If you skip down to the second to last full line, the last word, Reish Lakish Amar, Mishicha Mefereshes Min HaTorah. It says Mishicha explicitly in the Torah. And my time in the Reish Lakish Amar Kra V'chisim Kerumim Kar La Amisecha O Kano Miyad Amisecha. If you sell something to your friend, or you buy something from the hand of your friend, Davar Hanikna Miyad Liyad. So I'm going to close with this now, but just the basic presentation here. Reish Lakish claims that the din of the Mishnah is the din d'oraisa, that when a Jew buys from another Jew, and I'm being deliberate about this, when I return in 3 weeks, I think it is, we'll do a little chazara just to anchor us back in here, but we'll talk about it then. When a Jew buys from another Jew, Reish Lakish says, Mishicha is what makes the kinyan. If you gave kesef, midoraisa, it doesn't matter at all. And the only reason why the Mishnah, they say, imposed a curse upon you is because a good Jew is supposed to keep his word. That's how Reish Lakish understands the din of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is the din of the Torah. Mishicha from one Jew of a Jew from another Jew is kona. Kesef is not kona. Rabbi Yochanan says no. The Torah mo is konos. Now, from our sugi, you don't know what Rabbi Yochanan holds about Mishicha. There's a reason based upon a different sugi to think that Mishicha doesn't work, although I find that hard to believe. It's a sugi in Bechoros that's next, but we're not going to get to now. Rabbi Yochanan says that really min HaTorah giving cash. Cash is king. Once you pay the cash, then the object title transfers. But the Chachamim had a concern, and they didn't want to allow the Kenyan to stand that way, in normal cases, in most cases. And therefore, they were Mevatel the Kenyan, or they allowed you to be Mevatel. They weren't Mevatel the Kenyan. They allow either of the parties to be Mevatel the Kenyan. But because Min HaTorah, the Kenyan really should have been binding, they required one of the parties to accept a Mishapara. Now, the din lemaseh seems to be the same between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. But there are practical differences. Just one difference to, I think, give an idea. I think the Meiri claims this. Maybe they're earlier Rishonim. What happens if I pay the cash, I haven't made a Mashiach yet, and now I makdish the object, I dedicate it to Hekdesh. And then I subsequently make the kinyan of Mashiach on the object. According to Reish Lakish, for sure, the object is not Hekdesh. Because even though I paid the cash, not only mid the Rabbanim, but even mid the Oraisa, the object didn't belong to me because I didn't make a Mashiach. When I now consecrated the object, I was consecrating something that didn't belong to me. It's not Hekdesh. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, that Dvar Torah Ma'os really are Konos. But the Chachamim allowed either party to back out. So it may be that if neither party does eventually back out, in other words, I paid the cash, neither of us back out, you let me take the apples, then it may turn out that since I went through with the Mashiach in the end, I was kona already from the time that I gave the cash, and therefore if I was makdish, if I consecrated it to Hekdesh after then, now it actually would be shel Hekdesh. Yeah. Okay, but this is the basic machlokas of what is the din to Oraisa when you want to be kona metaltham from another Jew? Can you be kona with kesef? Or is Mashiach necessary? A machlokas Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, and we will eventually also have to talk about not only how it applies in the Gemara Bechoros and in our Gemara, but also actually how we paskin on this issue. We'll see. Tosus has a long discussion about this. Okay.